Get ready to whiten those knuckles and hold fast as we talk the most dangerous, daring, and epic sea stories ever told.
Whether facing ruthless men who prey on other mariners, or storms that turn calm seas into graveyards, those who go down to the sea and cast off lines enter the most challenging and dangerous environment on Earth.
Only here will you hear their stories and the lessons gained through their experience. I'm your host, Phil.
And I'm Bill.
And we welcome you aboard They Had to Go Out podcast. Before we dive into this episode, we need to provide a disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the individuals involved and are not to be construed as official or reflecting the views of any government agency or military service. This podcast is an independent effort with no government association.
When the most is expected, the brave men and women of the U.S. Coast Guard are always ready. The National Coast Guard Museum will engage, educate, and inspire visitors by honoring the courage and skill of our nation's unsung armed service. The museum will explore the Coast Guard's rich history and current impact through interactive exhibits, STEM-based learning experiences, and leadership development programming. Find out how you can join the effort. Become a plank owner today. Visit CoastGuardMuseum.org/out. That's CoastGuardMuseum.org/OUT.
One to check out is the Always Ready Collective, delivering art by and for daring fighters of the sea with their maritime-focused tattoo flash, pinups, and propaganda. Visit them on Facebook, Etsy, Instagram, and at AlwaysReadyCollective.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of They Had to Go Out podcast. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening, liking, subscribing, sharing. I told Bill I wasn't going to do that, but thank you guys for everything that you do to support the podcast, get the word out about the National Coast Guard Museum, and keep Bill and I and the museum motivated to continue bringing you guys the stories of Coast Guard veterans and their heroic deeds out on the water.
Yeah, old habits are hard to break, right, Phil?
They are, man.
Yeah, so welcome everybody. If it's your first time, we are glad you're here. You're going to like what you hear. After you're done liking this one, go back and listen to some other ones. You can get us on any podcast platform. Just type They Had to Go Out into your browser and you'll find our website, and that'll link you to everything. We've got some YouTubes. We've got the Instagrams, the Twitters. Follow us on all those platforms. Like us. Please give us a 5-star review if you like what you hear, which we know you're going to. If you don't like what you hear, let us know. We'll see what we can do. Can't please everybody, though.
Yeah, especially that guy that left the anchor message. But that's cool. You know, I mean, everybody's entitled to their opinion. Yeah. Hey, so I'm going to preface this one, because this one's kind of, I wouldn't call it unique, but, you know, sometimes we get a guest that's a flashpoint, and we got one today. And I would preface it by saying this. We've got a 20-year retired aviation survival technician chief, rescue swimmer chief on the line, who has a almost entirely operational career. No doubt about it that we're going to hear some epic tales. So as your mouth drops when we read his name, know that we're here to provide some stories from sea, and I think that's what we're going to get, and I'm stoked to hear it. Who we've got on the line, Mr. Claude Morrissey, ASTC retired. Born and raised out of Roxbury, New Jersey, joined the Coast Guard back in October 1998 with Recruit Company Golf 154. First unit was the mighty Coast Guard Cutter Cleet out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I cannot wait to hear about that tour. From there, he went to the Airman Program at East City and made it through, got to AST A School Class 1901, graduated there as Rescue Swimmer number 537. From there, his first air station assignment was Houston on board HH-65s. Went from there to Cape Cod aboard the HH-60s. That was good, wasn't it? I didn't even practice that.
I know you're in New England.
Yeah,
now.
I know. I didn't even practice that one. After Cape Cod in the 60s, went up to Kodiak, where rescue swimmers become men, from what I heard. It was on the Alpat. ran both 65s and 60s, and then to E-City, which he says is the greatest top-tier assignment for any rescue swimmer. I heard those words come out of his mouth. From there, went to ASTA school as cadre, and then finished out his career at Bass Portsmouth, retiring in November 2018 after more than 20 years of service. Welcome to the show, Claude.
Thank you, sir, for having me on board. It's pretty awesome that you guys gave me a call and let me do this with you.
We're stoked, man.
Yeah, Claude, we're glad to have you. Welcome. I'm going to ask you our question, obviously knowing that it's going to be a story from the cleat, because that's a pretty exciting unit. But what is your most dangerous daring or epic sea story or stories?
I'll tell you what, my most epic sea story would probably be reporting into Base Philadelphia to my newly found home for almost a year and a half, in my life almost 2 years, in Cutter Cleat, and seeing the mighty Redwood buoy tender, which was a 157 at the time, thinking I was on that one, because I look across the harbor, I couldn't even see the cleat. So basically reported to the wrong unit, you know. Of course they had fun with that, the black boat, the black shoes, right? The black boats. And I was on their spot. I was like, man, this is, did I look over and I finally realized in the wrong boat I had been had. So yeah, that was my first in-dock to an operational unit, you know. So, but yeah.
So how'd you figure it out? Did anybody, or did they just like, the Redwood guys were just like, oh yeah, come on.
Oh yeah, come on. They played right in there. It was weekend, you know, you show up on a Saturday morning at a boot camp, and of course you're gonna have fun with it. So everybody was on board. It was nothing that would. Finally, I went out to the buoy deck and looked across. I'm like, I'm on the wrong boat. There's a cleat over there. Like, you know the name, right? You see the back, and you're like, oh, man, what a knucklehead, you know? But you didn't really see the back. You know, you're scared, right? I mean, you come out of boot camp, and you're like, you don't want to piss anybody off. I got razzed about that shit for, oh, man, it had to be at least 6 months. So,
oh, sure. That's a total A-Tom thing to do, too. Like, now you're here. Go ahead. I'm surprised they didn't have you, like, out trying to do a heat and beat on the buoy deck in your traps or something.
Yeah. So that's how, I mean, dude, the Coast Guard has been just an awesome experience for me. You know, all the way around, from life lessons, and just, I could tell you a bunch of aviation sea stories. And, you know, I mean, best thing to do is just, you know, I like talking about more the crew camaraderie. You know, each unit had its own unique thing. So it's been awesome. So, you know, but as you go on questions, I'll probably bring up stories and hopefully I get a few laughs, maybe a few cries, who knows. So we'll see where this goes, you know. So,
well, what was your first case ever as a rescue swimmer?
so you know, I get all through, you know, I go through painting a boat up and down, you know, Cutter Cleat for a year and a half, almost 2 years. Go to school. I was a little bit fat and out of shape, so I was the airman for 6 months. Go to ASTA school for 4 months. You come out a stud, right? And you're never going to make mistakes. You're just a stud, right? You got, you know. So the first case I ever went on is go out to a heart attack victim on one of them big crew boats, like 60 people in the Gulf of Mexico on these boats, right? So I come up, you know, I come out of, you know, the guys, we're doing CPR. This is back when you weren't allowed to pronounce anybody. So you do CPR for like, you know, like sometimes an hour, hour and a half, you know? So you go out there. I get there, right? Get to this crew boat, head boat. I don't know what the hell they call them, but you guys know. But I get seasick, by the way. That's why I'm a rescue swimmer. So I get really seasick. So I'm like,
I'm a buzzman. I get seasick, man.
All right, man. So I'm like, oh, man, I got to go something else besides, you know, whatever. So I go get down to this boat, right? I come down, slide down on the boat, you know, look all cool, you know, pull the litter down behind me, you know, just like you see. And everybody's looking, right? I'm like, yeah, this is cool shit. So I take my flight helmet, right? I'm like, where's the patient? And little did I know, it slides across the cutting table. Where does it fall? Into the chum, right? So there's one guy's picking my helmet. I'll pick a fish guts out of it, right? And it's all covered, man. This thing is just filled up with just fish guts and blood and everything. I'm like, oh, my God, you know? So I run down there, grab this. Big, it was a humongous older gentleman, humongous dude. Grab a hold of him, go up the ladder, you know, some guy's helping me, and we're doing CPR. Well, by the time I drag this guy up a ladder in a crew boat, he was all the way forward, and they have like almost like a movie theater in there, you know, how they have him set up below. So I pull him up. Well, his pants come off, right? And this dude is like, his first off, his family's there, right? I'm not even noticing his pants are down. You know, everything's hanging out. There's kids in the boat. Everybody's like, oh, my God. You know, I'm like, oh, my God. You know, so trying to pull a dead dude's pants back up. You know, it was just a disaster from get-go. I'm doing CPR on him, throw him in the litter, and I got the whole crew boat to the front. We're almost capsizing because I sent everybody to the front at this point, right? Get up in the helicopter, go to the hospital, and, you know, freaking roll in there, right? And got just rolling through the hospital, UTMB Galveston, right, with this guy, right? And they're like, where does that come from, right? I'm like, came offshore, you know, I'm feeling like a real champ, you know? I had no business doing any of this. I was an EMT basic, you know what I mean? I had no idea what the hell I was doing, you know? But, you know, I kind of, like, realized, like, I hope this doesn't go. Because the time I got the helicopter, I'm sick. I got all those fish guts in my head. It was just terrible, you know? But that's my first case, man. It didn't go anything like, you know, like how the Guardian went, where just cool shit happens. I mean, it was a disaster from the moment I went there to the moment, you know, the moment I got there. I wound up losing some hair over that shit, you know, because something got in my helmet. It was terrible. But we went out and did, and the family actually wrote a thank you letter to me personally. Like, you were most professional. I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, like, I guess sometimes you just fake it till you make it. But that's kind of what happened with that one. So that was my first SAR case that I wish I could redo. You know,
I wish I could redo. No redos.
No redos in life, right? So, but yeah. So that was my first SAR case.
It brings to mind a question that we haven't asked anybody, Claude. So your rescue swimmer helmet, right? Whenever you look at Coast Guard imagery, like the official photos they put out, it always seems like rescue swimmers and flight mechs have like pieces of flair on it. Are you what are you allowed to put on that thing? Can you put anything on it? Do you have to like hit a certain milestone to be able to decorate that thing? How's that work?
You have a minimum of 24 pieces of flair.
Right, that's what I'm thinking. Like how many pieces of flair can you have?
That's kind of funny, man. We got we got some pilots who did like to do captain. These guys are all commanders and captains now. It's funny. I'm like, dude, you were a knucklehead back. They used to yell at you flight gear helmets. You know, I got yelled at by a chief for having a sticker of a dog with a bone in its mouth, you know. But I don't know. We always put little trinkets on there, you know, something that's, you know, I think when you become a flight mech or rescue swimmer, nobody's really going to give you shit, you know. One of the best experiences I've ever seen, though, is when I had this really talented guy, this guy, Sean Persinger. He can take art to the next level. And you don't get the drop down visors. You guys ever, you know, we got two different visors. You see like a clear visor, and you see like you can flip it back up and it could be a dark visor. And it's pretty cool. So Sean is really good at sandblasting and he's really good at art. So he sandblasts this, and I hope I'm not going to be rude, but he puts a wiener in that thing. This guy, Scott Holloway, was always another swimmer, first class. I was in second class up in Cape Cod. He drops the visor. And it is just the most epic that I've ever seen drawn in anything in the clear visor. He's looking, he's like, and he can't really see what's going on, but we all know, like, and now I can see it in the other flight, and I'm sitting in the troop seat, flight mechanic looks, he starts laughing, and the pilot's got to start looking, you know, so everybody's looking at this dude. That is the biggest, best player I've ever seen. He kept that helmet for like, I think that thing is still floating around. So
it's on. It's an award somewhere that's handed out to people.
Oh yeah,
it's the break-in helmet now.
Yeah, I tell you, it was some funny stuff,
dude. So. That took a totally different turn than I thought it would. I'm just picturing Superbad, man, the guy in the back of the room, like drawing on his desk.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Air Station Houston. We talked about the first case, right? What do you have to do? What do you got to do to get qualified when you get there? So you just reported to the unit from Rescue Swimmer School. Is it like jump on the helo and let's go?
No, I wish. That's what you think, right?
Yeah, that'd be cool, wouldn't it?
That's what Ashton Kutcher did. I don't get it.
I know.
Yeah, Ashton Kutcher did, and they're like, you know, it's like, the boat movie was a lot better. Let's just settle that right now. So,
but we didn't have Ashton Kutcher, man. We had Captain Kirk.
Yeah, but he's the cool Captain Kirk.
Yeah, but he's still Captain Kirk, man. Like, I don't know, the old Captain Kirk might have bested him a little bit.
So, what was a movie?
Finest Hours was the name of it.
Finest Hour, right? That was an awesome movie, wasn't it? Or what's your guys' take on it?
I thought it was cool. Just that story got told, and I thought, you know, they made it as, I think, as realistic as they could. for sure.
I think The Guardian was probably the worst movie I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, there was nothing true about that from get go. I mean, it was just way too much. It was just like, it was too scripted. You knew what was going to happen. But like The Finest Hour is a true story. You know what I mean? A very true story and a very awesome rescue. So I'm a little jealous of the boat world, man. You guys did that one right. You know, in aviation, we're like, we do everything right. No, The Guardian sucked. You know,
Disney did make The Finest Hours, and we might all hate on Disney sometimes, but they know how to tell a story.
Yeah. Wasn't Disney, though, The Guardian?
No. Maybe. Clue. Well, I don't know. Disney owns everything.
Yeah.
So probably.
Well, you know, like the E Club at E City with Red. You know Red, right? Were you there for her?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Like I get the you know, there's certain things that you guys do and that are in that community that I picked up on for sure. Like they had at least been there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know how many. Yeah. It's. I tell me this. How many times did you guys take the movie poster, cut out Ashton Kutcher and Kevin Costner's heads, and put your own face in there?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Just, I knew that happened.
Nonstop, you know. I think the thing about it is, you know, it's you got to sell movies, right, and everything else. So it's just a way weird, very weird situation, you know, when Hollywood steps into our world. Now, I was on Coast Guard Alaska, and I was the same dude as I was flying, as I was on the ground, as it was with my family. There's no bullshit about that, you know? And, you know, I always said that the camera adds, you know, I said, oh, the camera adds, you know, camera adds 10 pounds. And this guy, Chris Moore, goes, oh, it must've been five cameras on, you know? I'm like, oh,
that's funny.
But, you know,
that's friendship right there.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but, yep. So yeah, man.
So when you're at Houston, that's what we were talking about, getting certified on the 65s. What do you got to do?
Oh yeah, you know, you show up and you're the new guy, right? So you're standing in line for your duty. So you're watching, you know, your mentors go out on SAR cases doing really cool shit, and you're like, hey, how was that? You're like, hey, fuel the plane. We'll talk later. I'm tired. You know, I'm like, shit. You know, so go out, fuel the plane, get the biohazard of the plane. Hey, can I repack your EMT kit? You know, oh yeah, you can do that. So you're in line crew, you know, you're back to just towing planes around and washing planes, and, you know, so you get qualified quick. And I got qualified. I showed there in May, and I was qualified by July. So, and I got married and took 2 weeks of leave, so 2.5 weeks of leave, and moved my wife down. So it was, you know, it was a breakneck speed for me to get done. I was there, you know, 18-hour days, you know, getting loaded into aircraft, climbing on top, trying to figure out what engines do, how they work with their, you know, with the rotor head and, you know, all that stuff, avionics and life support, you know. But, you know, you kind of get the fire hose to the face again. But once you're through it, you kind of know what to look for, and you get some good mentors, you know. But that's kind of where I bond with flight mechanics. And they're really the heroes of the Coast Guard aviation, you know. Them boys do all the work. They train us, they help us, and they really just – they're just the unsung heroes, man. You know, everybody was, I want to see the pilot and rescue swimmer on the news. No, it's the flight mechanic. If it wasn't for his thumb, we'd all be fucked, you know?
Why his thumb? What's his thumb do? Is that what operates the winch?
Operates the winch, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's some awesome people, you know? And I didn't realize that. The AMT is like the third biggest rate in the Coast Guard, you know? I'm like, holy, I didn't realize how big they were, you know?
But, I didn't either. I thought there were like 10 of them. Yeah, that's crazy.
I was today years old when I learned that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean,
it's like a third or fourth. Maybe I'm saying third, but it's not far behind. Like, you wouldn't think it'd be that big. But when you think about it, I mean, there's a shit ton of aviation, you know. So.
Well, okay, so qualified swimmer, you've already seen your first death. You know this job's real now, right? Like, people are dying on your watch for sure.
So so just to close up the swimmer thing, and yeah. The best thing about it is when you're a new swimmer, you go out with your mentors, right? Your FEB instructors, your instructors. And I tell you what, I was an A school instructor, and I was an FEB instructor, flight examining board, and at almost all my stations, except for Houston, is the only one I was too new. They, the new kid, like, we try to kill we try to, like, as a new rescue swimmer, we actually almost try to kill the freaking, you know, our mentors, because we don't know what the hell we're doing. You know what I mean? And they have to go through it. You have to, like, I've been drowned. I've been picked up in my jaw by the hook. You know, it's just crazy. So, you know, you go in your flight phase, and it's just game on. You know, it's just the craziest shit ever. So, but anyway, I throw it out there for every FUB guy out there that's trained new kids. It's almost like scary. Not as bad as co-pilot hoisting at night. Sorry, I kind of got stuttered there. But anyway, co-pilot upgrade at night almost kill you every time. So, so anyway, man, I throw it out to my rest of my brothers as well.
I like it. So you've seen your first case. You've seen death. You know it's real. What was your first save?
So my first save was, as I was in Houston, right? It's a busy air station, but it's all luck of the draw, right? So I went almost, I think, 2 years before I got in the water. I was dying. You know, I was like, man, maybe this will be the day I'll go in the water. Like, I was starting to think, like, I did medevacs, and I've done, you know, people on land, you know, but I didn't really swim. You know, I didn't really jump out of a helicopter or get on the hook and swim, you know. So it almost like 2 years, and I was like, man, am I going to break this cherry? Am I going to get a water case? You know, am I going to be the one to talk about? And, you know, what the guys in the shop are talking about. So Hurricane Claudette rolls into Houston in like 2003, and two fishermen run over the jetty there in Sabine Pass. They're in a drink and fly over them, you know, come back, got a really, really good co-pilot, really good pilot, really good flight mechanic. Come down, swoop in, direct deployments, pull these guys out, like, and he's feeding these guys, like, he came out of sky like Angel, you know, and it's just funny to hear that, you know, so that was my big thing, you know. It was right offshore, but it was in a hurricane, you know, it was something to be said, you know. It was a good way to, you know, good first water case, so to say, right. And, you know, that was the most, and then, you start just going off there, and then it's like the floodgates opened up. Like, once you get that first initial save, it's like, we're just going to throw it all at your way now. And you just start doing more and more and more, and it's just one of the more number ones that was up from, I want to say up your way, Bahaba. Bahaba. And, you know, you start getting cocky, right? Because now you're getting all these water cases, right? It's my first case in Cape Cod. I did Mighty 860. I come swimming up. It's like 2000, right after Katrina. Not far after Katrina, you know, we went to Katrina, every swimmer was at Katrina, you know, oh, it was epic, you know, whatever. It was the easiest hoisting I've ever done off rooftops, you know. So, moving on to first case in Big Iron in the water, I swim up to the life raft, and there's like four guys in this life raft, and I'm like, Captain, you know, ask grass or gas, nobody rides for free. And he's like, what? You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't do that. You know, I give that stuff out. I'm like, I take credit card. He's like, he goes, what the? And I'm like, I'm kidding. Come on, you know. And he pulled him out of the raft, go to the big muddy H60. And, you know, it's just always a good epic tale, you know, when you have a little bit of humor with people, you know. But
it's just funny. So I don't picture that guy saying, like, he came down from the sky like an angel.
Yeah, he's like, he's got like angel. My wife's got, like, she's really, over the years, has really kept really close tabs on what I've done, and which is kind of awesome, because, you know, when you live the moment, you're like, ah, whatever. But, like, she can remember things, like, and she'll have videos, and especially now with Facebook and everything else, like, she'll always blow me away and share something, you know, that, like, me with hair, you know, like, oh, my God, I had hair one time, you know. What the hell happened to it, you know? So, yeah, she'll always say that. She'll tell a story, and she'll be like, ah, and these guys, she came down the sky like Angel. I always get a little chuckle out of it, because she's really, my wife's really proud of my career, you know what I mean? And so are my kids, you know? So, but,
you talk about, like, transitioning into the, you called it the big iron, right? The 60, from the 65 to the 60?
Yes, sir.
What do you think? Which one wins out?
Well, so, here's the thing. Which one wins out is obviously the military. You know, we bought a French race car to do search and rescue work, so it didn't really work out as well. And the French really jammed it, you know, up to Coast Guard, you know where. And, but not a bad airframe, but, you know, we the thing is, you can't buy Porsche anymore. So obviously the 60 is still being produced. The 65 is not. And, you know, the 60 wins out every time. It's just bigger, faster. It's a big dump truck. You know, it's a star machine, you know.
Welcome to every cutter in the Coast Guard. You can't buy parts for it anymore.
Yeah. Right. You know, the thing about it is we spend all this money on flight decks and you're like, man, how about we just, now they're putting the blade poles back on the 60s I saw last week at a retirement on base over here at ALC. I'm like, holy God, I got blade poles on that thing. But they're going to put 60s back on cutters. You know, you're like, man, it's crazy, you know. But talk about going full circle there. But, you know, I like the 60. I have a job as a rescue swimmer. I run the radios. I communicate to the pilots, to the, you know, sectors and stuff. I have a job. And the 65, I'm a piece of SAR gear. I sit in back and I told, you know, I'm not a rescue dog, you know, but the 60, I'm navigating, you know, I'm doing a lot of things, you know, to help the pilots out, which is awesome. So, you know,
yeah, I didn't know there was a difference between, like, I mean, obviously a difference between the airframes, but I didn't know there was a difference between the jobs in there. What do you do as a navigator?
Well, you back the pilots up. You're not navigating, but you're like, you know, up in Alaska, you know, you're on the we had AV maps back in the day on the J models, and you know, you're following along, and you know, hey, there's a mountain over here, a mountain over there, sir. What's your fuel burn? You know, it's just you're more interactive with the crew as a rescue swimmer on a 60. You know, you're trying to get off HF with, you know, cams, you know, then I'm called cams, Comcom now, whatever, or Comstay Kodiak or something like that. You know, so you do a lot of. It's just more crew oriented in the 60, you know.
Do you have a window on the 60?
Yep, you got two windows at the side.
And on the 65, you don't have a window, right?
You got a window at the right side. Oh, left side is just avionics, yeah.
I got you.
Not really the best search platform either, you know.
Yeah.
So, but
what's the hoisting? Is it different between a 60 and 65?
So, it's funny, right? So I have about 2,800 hours of airframe time. I almost got 3,000 count my civilian time, working for a different company with the Gusa 139s. Anyway, that's not a convoluted story there, but, the 65 will spit water in your face all day long, right? The 60 will push you under, but the 60 is so big, there is a sweet spot under the fuselage. So the 60 is actually easier to hoist under if you get in that sweet spot. You know, because the fuselage blocks it, and it's going around you, you know? So, I always enjoy the 60, the cab, you know. The 65, I grab the pilot's chair and shake it, and they get all nervous because they're right there. The 60 is, you know, they're 10 feet behind you, so it's just a beast, you know? Yeah. I'll take a 60 any day, so.
What was the furthest offshore you ever went? Was it a 60 or 65 for a case?
So it was a 60 out of Elizabeth City. You know, up in Alaska, we'll go 2,000. Let's say a generic number. Let's just say, you know, we'll go from halfway across the United States compared to Alaska, from Kodiak to, you know, Adak or something like that, you know. But that'll take a couple of days. You have fuel stops along the way. You know, at Elizabeth City, you get launched out. You might go to Bermuda. You know, you have to go hoist, stop, and then go to Bermuda. But the furthest we've ever been out was probably just about 270 miles, you know, straight out of Elizabeth City, and hoisted the guy that actually started Pinterest, funded Pinterest.
Wow.
He had a sailboat built out of somewhere in Wanchese, North Carolina. And this guy's a billionaire, right? And he goes out and he goes out in the storm, and they probably shouldn't have been out there, and they break the mast off a carbon fiber mast, breaks, right? Snaps right off, which is weird because you're like, where the hell is the mast? When you get out there, it's a catamaran, very expensive boat. It's beat to shit. The windows are blown out of it. You're like, man, these guys went through hell. Tankers can't get close enough to get them on the boat. And, you know, here I come out of the sky like an angel again, right? So, you know. And we're 270 miles. So you're like, man, you're nowhere. Like, we got to get this shit done. We got to get five people out of here, and we got to go.
What was your line for this one?
Well, I didn't know there were billionaires, right? So I walk up, and I'm like, nice boat. right? Yeah. So let me tell you, a billionaire son and a billionaire are just as scared as anybody else in the world. Doesn't make them any cooler. They're the same people at that point. You know, we're all equal at that point, right? You're depending on the Coast Guard, right? The Coast Guard's there to save this billionaire, right? So obviously there's a couple crew guys on there, three crew guys. Two, they were awesome. You know, they kind of like, almost like they'd been through it before. I'm like, you know, you guys get paid to wreck boats like this? You know what I mean? Because anyway, kind of rough sea state, grab the kid, you know, grab the billionaire son. He's like 20, 21. You know, he's like, Dad, let me just keep going. So we pull the guys out, kind of rough seas, get back up in there. I hurt my back, tweaked my back a little bit on that one. But get back to this cold-ass helicopter, right? It's January, February of, you know, I think it was 14 or 15, 2015. And we're streaming back, and, you know, the C-130s overhead, and they're like, we're all talking on the radio. And, you know, they're like, hey, if you have to land on the beach, just land on the beach. We can't get you any gas anywhere else. We know you guys are probably close. We're like, ah, okay. I'm like, so for some reason, I'm like, I'm pretty freaking witty. So I pull up. I'm like, yeah, we're going to need a fuel truck to meet us. I tell the C-130. And they're like, well, where are they going to meet you? I'm like, we're going to land at this. And I knew we have maps, right? So I'm like, we're going to land at the strip, basically this place called Headlights. That's my plan, right? So I radio, I'm like, we're going to have to meet. I said, the closest point of land from here is this place, this one gentleman establishment. And we're on the radio talking about all this. So everybody's listening, like Sector, and whoever can hear us is hearing our HF, you know. And they're like, really? They want us to meet there? And we're like, no, man, we're going to the airport, you know. So it's actually, you know, in one of this pilot, Brian Boland's awesome dude. He talked about it. But in one of his things. So we land at the airport. Well, the whole time I'm riding out there, I'm like, man, I'm in a dry suit. I'm kind of cold. And these guys are like shivering and shit. Before I left, I had like 5 wool blankets. So freaking land at Manio Airport. And the guy goes, I've never been so cold in my life. And I'm like, the guy is sitting on 5 blankets. I'm like, I kind of feel like a douchebag right now, you know, 5 wool blankets. yeah, he bought us pizza. And I'm like, this guy, like, I think he'd freaking, you know, pull me out and buy us a gym or something like that. You know what I mean? But he never did. Shittiest gym in the world was the
same. That was the guy you should have said, hey, I accept credit cards too.
Yeah, oh, right.
You, he was actually a nice man, and you just got to realize, no matter how much money you have, when shit's bad out there, we're going,
right?
Like, we're going out to get these people. You know, we got families back home. Who would, you know, and you guys up there in Maine and everywhere else, it's just, That's no joke, you know. That's definitely no joke being up there in the mighty North Atlantic in the wintertime. So,
I've been a lot of places on a lot of water, and if the wind starts blowing hard enough, it doesn't matter where you are, it's scary.
Yeah, yeah. We could be on a Great Lakes, right? But like, oh, Great Lakes sailor, you know, they get wave city. You know? So
I've seen 15 footers on Superior. Like, really? On more than one occasion. Oh yeah,
with zero period, and they're just backbreaking. That's the problem with you. It's like the Gulf of Mexico. Right. It's just, yeah, stand by for some disability.
Yeah, Superior, I don't think is as bad as, because you were on Lake Erie, right, Phil?
Yeah,
back in the day.
Yep.
Yeah, that thing's like a bathtub. It's like 2 inches deep.
Yeah, man, I'm telling you, it hurt. There was a 47 there for a reason, but that thing, dude, that was a rough ride. It makes me like, I'm stretching right now, you know what I mean? Like moving my back back and forth just because I can feel it. Well, Claude, I know you won Geico, I think it was Geico Military Person of the Year, right?
Yeah, so I won when I was in the cutter cleat. I did such a good job.
Get out of here.
It all goes back to the cleat.
Let me tell you about how this went.
We've got a lot more of this episode to go, and we'll get right back to it after this short ad from our sponsor. We're going to give you a key number about the future National Coast Guard Museum, and that number is 5.
There are 5 themed storylines: lifesavers around the globe, enforcers on the seas, defenders of our nation, champions of commerce, and protectors of the environment.
The exhibits and galleries in those storylines will be showcased in a 5-story museum.
And here's our favorite 5. For as little as $5 a month, you can be a plank owner and support construction of the National Coast Guard Museum.
For details on how you can get involved, go to coastguardmuseum.org/out. That's coastguardmuseum.org/OUT.
want to check out is the Always Ready Collective, delivering art by and for daring fighters of the sea with their maritime-focused tattoo flash, pinups, and propaganda. Visit them on Facebook, Etsy, Instagram, and at alwaysreadycollective.com.
The world goes full circle, and karma's always a bitch, right? So I'm on a cutter cleat. I'm from New Jersey, blue-collar family, work hard, right? So they're like, hey, paint the boat. I'm like, okay, paint the boat. Start the top, paint your way down, right? Paint the boat again. Like, I felt like the Karate Kid at one point. You know, I'm painting this boat up and down. Like, I'm like, when do I get to do cool shit and go beat up the Cobra Kai guys? You know, it'd be funny, you know. I just kept painting this boat, right? Deck gray, black, star, you know, whatever color.
Just by the time you finish, it's already rusted again.
Yeah. So, you know, and we're in the fresh water, but, like, I'm painting this boat. You know, other non-rate, we're just trying to stay out of trouble, right? Because we're just rolling around partying, doing boardings, and, you know, and we're doing a little bit of Aton here and there. And, but, you know, we had a really good chief. So they realized that I cared. You know, so here I am thinking, I might be a damage patrolman, right? I see the best shot in my Coast Guard, right? So I never made it to the list for some reason, and I was still striking BM. And, but, in the meantime, I had a guy named Jeff Kerner, BMC Kerner. He's awesome, dude. He was probably one of your detailers. Jeff Kerner, he was a warrant detailer at one point. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he just had, and this guy Bob Field and this guy Jay DeCave, they're really good mentors, you know, as far as just good people too. And they recognized me as being, I got all the way up to 5th District, and this is a person of the year, you know. So I beat out, the funny thing is, in 2000, I beat out this guy, Shannon Scaff, which is my mentor as a rescue swimmer, right? So here I come bebopping in, you know, Air Force Lizard City as a non-rate. And I get, you know, he's like, hey, man, I just realized something. I'm your mentor, and you beat me out of the D5 Enlisted Person of the Year. You know, I'm like, oh, here we go. So, yeah, I paid for that one dearly. But, you know, that was my first, like, taste. If you work hard and you play hard, you get rewarded in the Coast Guard. And so I'm pretty proud of that, you know, as a non-rate doing that. And then, you know, throughout my whole career, you know, you get a couple – I think I got show a quarter a couple times, Pritchard Award. You know, Pritchard Award's just outstanding air crew for a six-month period, you know, and pilots recognize it. So it's pretty cool. But I got Geico Military Person of the Year in 2013. I had some really good people up in Kodiak. I had a guy, George Cottrell, the pilot. He recognized me, and it was pretty cool, man, you know, getting that award. Because I didn't get it for doing a rescue. I got it for doing shit that you should do, like mentoring, you know, like being a forklift driver, instructor, you know, stuff that outside of the range, you know. And that's what I love about the Coast Guard is you can step outside of them things and get recognized for it, you know? So, and worst thing was, where it was the hardest was being a CDAR up there. I don't drink. After I got off the boat, I was kind of drying out, you know? Does that make sense to you guys? You know, like, you work hard, play hard. And that was a big thing in the early 2000s. But, yep. You know, I kind of dried up, and I realized that, you know, I'm not a very good drunk, you know. I broke into a power plant and cut her cleat, and my almost gave my chief an aneurysm. So, you know, New Jersey. So he says, maybe you shouldn't drink anymore. And I kind of took that, like, or maybe you should moderate your drinking. When your chief ONC says that, you're probably at the point where they're tired of you, you know what I mean? And the next step could be problems, you know. So, took his advice and dried up a little bit. Just had I became a CR. And that's where I helped a lot of people. It was always hard to know that some of the people in the command would never tell the people that their career was going to be over, and they kind of put it on you as a CR. That was the hardest part for me sometimes, to be brutally honest with them, be like, hey, man, you know, you got to kind of, you know, you maybe played this one out too hard, you know what I mean? And
yeah, and A Claude, for anybody that doesn't know, CDAR is the command drug and alcohol rep. So if
they
somebody
still have them?
Yeah, they still got
it. Yeah, it's still around for sure.
Yep. So if somebody gets in trouble with alcohol, or they self-refer, like they recognize they've got a problem, or maybe the command sees they have a problem, then they go to somebody like Claude to kind of facilitate that whole thing, get them treatment and get them help.
Yeah.
Sorry, man. I just wanted to throw it out there so people knew.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I should have probably said that, but that was probably the most like rewarding, but yet the most like sometimes like depressing, because you see people that are really good people, and like especially when they change the rule, they'd be like, it's one and done. You're like, oh my god, this kid's got, he made one mistake and here we are kicking this kid out of the Coast Guard for this, you know, and he's 22 years old and he went out and got drunk and got picked up for drunk and disorderly. I think maybe he was sleeping in his car, something like that, you know what I mean? Just something that was, he tried to do the right thing, but he just got jammed up doing it, you know? And I've seen a couple of them where, you know, the kid was asleep in his car and then they freaking, you know, they'll pop him for a DUI because his keys are missing. So that was always tough, you know?
See, but, now that right there is where you can say that the Guardian is way off base, because that stuff would have never flown.
No.
Yeah,
you'd
be gone. Everybody'd be gone. Whole command relief.
Yeah, you're not. Yeah, that's how it goes. Yeah, we all know that, you know? And that's what gets me so freaking aggravated about that shit, because they shouldn't portray that, and then all of a sudden, you know, how it is, man. So
I feel like the Guardian put the Coast Guard of the, I guess, early 2000s was the pictures, but that was more like the Coast Guard of the, like, 70s that they were telling the story of, like, when that kind of stuff did fly. But, yeah, it's definitely, it's just not the world we live in anymore at all when it comes to us.
I'd say in the early 2000s you would get masted for it, but you could recover from a mast. And then in the late 2000s, that option went away.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Absolutely. They really, even like a good ass chewing sometimes would go a lot further than even like a mast would. You know what I mean? So does that make sense to you guys? So like a solid ass chewing by somebody that's really, really just straightened some people out, you know?
Right.
So, but, you know, they don't allow it anymore. Everything's got to be documented, you know, which is crazy because.
Yeah. Well, you know, I worked, one of the best COs I ever worked for. He, if you came in front of him for a mast, if it was like your first time being masked, first classes, I saw him do this too, non-rates, whatever. If it was your first time getting in any like real trouble, he would almost always suspend the sentence. And his usually one of the last things he said was, if you're really like a bad actor, I'm going to see you again. And then I'm going to nail your rear end to the wall and get you out of my Coast Guard. But here you go. So like, I think he kind of figured out how to work this modern system where they're like, yes, you had a mask, but no, I didn't hammer you in the process of the mask. So we're kind of satisfying everybody.
Yeah. And their hands are tied. I mean, one thing I'll tell you is from all the stuff I went through, definitely if you follow the rule book that the Coast Guard plays out for you on both sides, you're generally going to be okay, you know, as a command. And as you know, it's when you don't follow the rules, you know, that's when stuff starts going sideways, you know,
right.
And people get in a lot more trouble than they should be, you know? So, but yeah.
So the note to all junior listeners out there, follow the rules.
Right. Which you would think when you join the military, like that's a given, like you volunteered for this.
Yeah, man. But you know, hey, you got to think too, like, you know, it's a good point about the Guardian just kind of sets a tone, right? A lot of people watch that movie before they join, and, I get it. I mean, there's a culture, you know, that whole culture exists for sure. I think we just beat it out of people or we get them out, you know, pretty quickly. But, I would fully say that's a real thing. You know, that's something you got to guard against. Public service is definitely a privilege. You know, if you want to do it, you got to commit.
Yeah. And that's what it is. And when you sign a dotted line, you give up some of your rights, you got to follow the rules, you know, the rules that are out there. And if you don't, or if you're going to find out real quick if who's a rule follower, you know, I'm not saying be blind obedience, but what I'm saying is you got to play the game and you have to play the game well if you want to succeed. Right. So, you know, and there's a lot of benefit to playing that game. For junior listeners, it's very important that, you know, that if you see something, you speak up. Right. I mean, that's the best thing, you know, so. that's something not right, you speak up every time, and you'll it always pay off, you know. So,
man, a little mentoring with a C story. I like it.
Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, doesn't happen often.
That's what we're taught in aviation. I mean, something's not right. We're all flying here. You speak up. You know, hey, why is that shit smoking? You know, oh, I don't miss. But
that's a PG-13. You're good.
Yep. So it's just crazy that, you know, and no matter what it is, you know, if you're underway, you know, you call it all right. There's rocks. You're gonna call them out, right? I don't know if it works, you know. But
yeah, that was a good analogy, man. I like it. That's pretty good. Yeah.
Don't rock that.
Hey, boss, what side of the buoy supposed to be on?
There you go. That's a good one. Yeah, that one's totally valid.
You know, where are we at? You know, like, are we supposed to be here? You know, I actually have, you know, doing my business now, we still incorporate ORM and all the other stuff that we learn in the Coast Guard because we're doing tree work. So it's kind of about the same thing, you know. Everybody can speak up, you know, stop the whole thing and go from there. So,
a rescue swimmer doing tree work, man. I would say that is the perfect retirement job for a rescue swimmer. Comfortable with heights. You know, I've seen the photos from Katrina. You guys out there with axes and chainsaws. Perfect.
Yeah.
What's the name of the company? Do you own the company?
Yeah. It started out as Morsi Stumpfinding on Cape Cod, and then I quickly worked in a Morsi Tree Service. And you know what gets me a ton of business, and it gets every day it puts toes in my back. It's got veteran owned and operated.
Yeah.
When you put that on the side of a truck, when you're a veteran and you put that on the side of a truck and you 20 years and you draw retirement, or even if you're a veteran for 4 years, or 2 years, whatever, people really appreciate veterans. And if you can give them that and you can advertise that service for anybody thinking of getting out of the Coast Guard, like, oh, but start own business. If you could do veteran owned and operated on the side of your truck or your logo, you're going to be, you know, it's going to be, you're going to make so much money.
Do you have a rescue really swimmer on your logo too?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Good man.
I got everything. Every customer is on every vehicle I own. I've probably got 8 trucks running around, you know, my wife's car, my lawnmower, my weed whacker. It's got a rescue swimmer logo on it. Man, nice. It's funny, you know. It's just like ingrained, and everybody laughs at me. Like, I got a dumpster that I bought right out of Connecticut, and it's got a rescue swimmer logo on it. I'm like, what? Why is this on here? You know, and it's all like rusted out and stuff. I'm like, we tag everything. Swimmers do that, you know. So, but
what's the coolest thing you ever tagged in the real world?
Oh, coolest thing I ever tagged in the real world, not Coast Guard related, or
yeah, like with the swimmer sticker or something.
Well, the best story I ever had about rescue swimmer giving that stuff was, so George Bush is from Texas, right?
Right.
Both of them. So I'm on duty, right? And this Air Force One comes in. We're not allowed to be outside, but so the guy that carries the football is a commander, right? He's a Coast Guard commander. He comes in, right? I'm like, oh, hey, Commander. I'm like, I'm going to give the president a tank top or swimmer tank top. Are you cool with that? He's like, yeah, can I have one? And the only way to get a rescue swimmer t-shirt, I'm not going to tell you, you got to call one of the shops and ask, you know. But there's only two ways to get a rescue swimmer t-shirt. And I'm going to leave that one for another podcast. You might be back, but the more X-rated after dark podcast, right? So, I give the guy a t-shirt and I give the president like a tank top, and I'm like thinking nothing of it. And like 2 months later, I get a letter. Thank you for the, you know, Petty Officer Morsi. Thank you for the kind gesture of getting the restroom t-shirt. I like to wear it when I run. I'm like, no way. You know, so President Bush, you know, the second one, is wearing a t-shirt. And I think that's kind of a cool story. You know,
it is a cool story for sure.
Yeah, they recognize me. They recognize me up there. I'm kind of a joker. So like, I think the captain, you know, he got a kick out of it, you know, but it makes everybody feel good, right? You know, so, but,
yeah, I mean, I kind of want to find out how to get the t-shirt now. I'm afraid to call.
I know, man. You know, like, yeah, like, I think you ought to just tell us.
I went to Chiefs Academy with a couple of guys, a couple of swimmers. So I'm just calling them.
Who'd you go with?
Man, I'd honestly have to look at my class list now. Like look at their names. 'Cause I really don't remember their names.
So either you go through school or you sleep with a swimmer. you know, or, yeah, you know, something like that.
Bill's got a shirt.
Oh, does?
No. No, I got a shirt.
So we'll tear that shit off you, too. Like, we were doing a fun run in Cape Cod, and this flight mechanic, Jerry Trom, had one on. He did a lot of hoisting for me. He had one on, and I think the other guy set him up. He's like, hey, I got a swimmer t-shirt on. Like, four of us ganged up on him and pretty much assaulted this kid to get the shirt off, ripped the shirt off his back, and like it was like, you probably,
what if he earned it?
Well, then we figured he'd live with a swimmer, so maybe he did earn it. But at the time, it was don't ask, don't tell, so we were kind of covered, you know. So,
we can't even ask him. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, but that's kind of the antics of going to a swimmer shop. So a swimmer shop back in the day was a fraternity. And I look back on this now, I never had a female restroom or station with me, but I often said, you know, would it then ever be different? I don't think it's different with a female there. I think what makes it different is, I don't, I'm going to get into kind of the weeds here. You know, I would have done things a lot different if there was a female in the shop, because it was kind of a raunchy humor in the beginning, but swimmer shops are always a very safe place to go in and to have your true feelings. And I'm not going to make this into a weird thing, but, you know, we're men of men, you know, that's what we consider ourselves. And, you know, I think that it would be hard for somebody like, you know, Sarah Faulkner, that was kind of like having some issues with some rowdy guys. And I could see where it could go, you know, and I kind of feel bad for her if ever, you know, something like that happened, you know. But, you know, I always treat everybody the same, so I never had a problem with it. But I can see where some shops might get a little, back in the day, got a little bit off key with it, you know. So I didn't mean to bring it down there, but I hope I explained that enough, you know what I mean? So the Coast Guard.
I don't think the boat community is any different, Claude. Like, I think in, you know, 15, 20 years, I think we've come a long way in learning how to still have fun, but maybe include everybody instead of only include one kind of person. Which, yeah, is what it was 15 years ago, because we were still learning how to have people that, you know, were different gender or even looked different than us. Because, you know, it's the demographics are very, there's a very, if you say rescue swimmer, we all see one real specific demographic, and pretty much for bosun mate too. But that's, yeah, starting to change for sure. And, yep, you know, change is the only constant, right?
Yeah, it's definitely a, we're in a very, we're at a good spot right now. I hope the Coast Guard gets a little bit smarter in their leadership and really just can right the ship more to say and realize there's going to be problems and how you deal with them problems, you know, and go from there. So, but yeah, we're definitely, I hope we're making changes here by telling the story. You know what I mean? So hopefully things, yeah, can happen and we get the word out. And if we can get, I feel the three of us are, you know, if we can, you know, if we can get to just five people and then make a better decision, that'd be awesome. You know what I mean? And that's how you make little strides, right? They can mentor five people. And next thing you know, you've got thousands of people you reached out to, and they're like, man, that makes total sense, you know? So, but anyway, I guess we'll see what happens, right? Down the road.
Yeah, man, at the end of the day, just treat others like you want to be treated, and I think you'll do all, yeah, right, you know?
So I got my good friend is a retired Navy SEAL Master Chief, and he's like, he goes and I talks. He's a very, very good talker, very good speaker. He's like, come on, he goes, what do you think the best book is for influence leadership? I'm like, I don't know, I'm kind of listening to, I got very many leather-bound books that I'm going through, Master Chief, and my whole den is full of them, and I've got, like, many, many leather-bound. He's like, come on, man. He's like, think about it. He's like, Horton Hears a Who. If you can follow that in life, I'm like, what? He goes, Horton Hears a Who. I'm like, what does that mean? It's a Disney book. He's like, just read it. And he said, if you can follow that and instill that, and he's right, though. I mean, teach you how to be, you know, how to treat people, how to listen to people. Like, he's like, he's a smart man. And he's been in combat, so what the hell, what do I know, you know? And if you can just take it to the basic level, treat others how you want to be treated, it'll be good, right?
So, yeah, man, little Dr. Seuss for everybody out there. I like it. What's the other one? What's the one with the environment? It's the it's the little orange guy.
The Lorax, dude.
What a great message in that thing too. You know, don't cut down all the trees.
Right. I mean, why are we spending all this money on GMT? Why don't we just go watch that a couple times? You know, let's just show that boot camp. Be like, hey, man, you know, like let's watch a couple of cartoons that kind of got it right. You know,
I like it, man.
You know. So,
hey, one question for you. You were talking about earlier that the one story about what was painted on the visor of the helmet. Who painted it? What was his name again?
His name was sandblasted it. Sean Persinger. He'd be a character for you guys to get a hold of too.
I was thinking old Joey. Do you know Joey Grazinha?
Yeah, he painted my retirement gift. I got a
That dude is a Joey's solid artist.
Yeah. Have you got anything from him? Have you guys reached out to him?
I did. I saw him. He posted that. Let's see. Whose retirement gift is this? Z Lee. Did you see Z Lee's shadow box? Dude, what a masterpiece that thing was.
Yeah, Joey was actually eating Twizzlers out of another retired swimmer's toes. It was something else to be seen in my truck. So, Joey.
It's just never ending, dude.
Some things haven't changed.
Nope.
If I can have talent, you know, like his talent, and I think as a wrestler, like, you don't really think, like, when you look at a wrestler, you're like, oh, that guy's type A personality, you know, it's upset helicopters, you know. Like, you think of a gym rat, right? That's why I gotta think of most swimmers, but there's so many talented swimmers out there that you never know. Like, you're like, man, that guy can do that? You're like, yeah, that guy's a gifted musician. Oh, that guy's a... you know, that guy's got his own business doing this or that. It's pretty wild, you know? So, Joey is gifted. I mean, I was so jealous of that retirement of that. I almost stole it. If I could have, I told Z, we were back at his house. He goes, Z, if I get a chance to steal it, I'm going to steal it. He goes, oh man, come on, man. You know? So, you know, but,
yeah, well, hey, we should do, you know, we'll do a plug for Stronghold Sign Arts LLC. It is a phenomenal stuff that guy's doing.
Yeah, he does, and I'm like looking at this, he's like, Claude, I don't like the way that box came out. I'm like, that's probably the nicest shadow box I've ever seen, you know. And I've seen a lot of shadow boxes and trunks and everything else, but that is definitely was one of the coolest ones. I was a little jealous, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, so, man. And you know what's cool is, like, it's one of those shadow boxes that even if like 300 other people had it, it would still be cool on your wall, you know. Because like, you go for the novelty or whatever, that thing was pretty pimp.
Yeah, it's just wild looking. Just incredible. You know, that's what people in the Coast Guard, not only rescue so much, but just people in the Coast Guard are a unique bunch because we really don't fit in the mold of the military, but we don't fit in the mold of the civilian rescue, right? So, or LE or whatever. So we're just unique people. And that's what I love about the Coast Guard. You know, what are we, 40,000 strong now?
Well, yep.
What's that? Yeah, give or take. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a small thing. So no matter how good or how bad you do, you mess up good enough or do something well enough, you're pretty much, you know, you're going to be recognized in the Coast Guard. It's, oh, here comes that guy.
Your name will be remembered. And that's true. Yep.
Good or bad.
Yep.
Good or bad. Good or bad, that's the God's honest truth.
So. Well, we totally got it off topic, like, on several things. Question for you: What is ALPAT that you were assigned to up in Kodiak? Like, what's the mission, and then what's the coolest part of it that you did?
So when I went up to Kodiak, back in the day, you had two different shops. You had the ALPAT shop, which is I couldn't even begin to tell you ALPAT. God Almighty, Pacific. It's basically Fisher patrols. You go back on 378s. You sit on back of, you know, you deploy to back of cutters, and you guard a king crab fleet, and you guard the Ophelio crab, and you're on board for 2 months at a time, you know. So you're actually shipboard up there, and you know, the best thing about that
just is stealing midrats from the crew, right?
Yep. Yeah. We only spent 2 days on the boat because the boat was out of limits the whole time. So we were on land base the whole time doing fishing patrols from land. So that was a year of my life, ALPAT. But I worked for one of the best guys in the world. His name is Brian Goodbody, one of my best friends. He's run by a first class swimmer. Just an awesome guy, you know. But, you know, I was a second class underneath him. We were at school at the same time. And, you know, a lot of mentoring and just an awesome dude. And then I went over to the 60 side for my last 3 years in Kodiak, you know. So Kodiak was a unique piece, man. You got a star case, you're going to get an award. You know, you're going to get something for it if you get a star case, and it's a big enough star case. But, you know, it's everything. You know, some things, like the worst thing about, I think, about Kodiak for me is I was seeing so many cool things in the in Kodiak itself, flying around the whole state from, you know, from Barrow all the way down to, you know, down to that Yakutak, Sitka area, all that stuff. But you see it, but you're like, man, I just wish my family was there to see it sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
And seeing, you know, like at the end of Kodiak, you know, you got, you know, a dead whale on the that washed up, and there's 20 brown bears eating on this thing. You're like, you'll never see that. Nobody will ever see that. You know what I mean? And, you know, it's just, to me, I wish my family could have shared some of it, you know? So getting a little sentimental in my old age, you know? But, you know, so yeah, get a good picture of it and go from there. So,
why do you think it's an award for every rescue up there? Is it just the conditions or what?
It is just the sheer, you don't get a lot of it. People are pretty prepared up in Kodiak, you know, up in Alaska. They're really prepared to, you know, for the worst. So when you go out, it is the worst, you know, it's everything has failed, you know, their backup to the backup pump has failed, you know, and the weather's just not cooperating. And, you know, we've actually had to fly 60s down into the SAR case, you know, like have all the power out and actually fly down. Cause you can't, you know, you can't get, it's keeping you up, the wind, you know? So I think that, you don't get a lot, but when you go out, it's life and death. It's truly life and death. You really save lives up there, you know, versus the boaters down here, you know, they run ashore, they run aground. I'm like, hey man, if you want to grab, like I always tell the air crew, if, you know, if you ever get in trouble and land on the beach here, walk up to the nearest house, get a cup of coffee and call the air station. You know, up in Alaska, when you're training air crews, you're like, this is legit. You really have to know how your survival gear works, because you're going to be in the ocean for up to, you know, you could be up the ocean for a day before they rescue you, you know? So.
What's the hairiest storm that you ever deployed in?
It's actually, it was, the Midnight Sun star case was that January, February of 2011 or 12, 11. Anyway, it was just a freaking really, really nasty, like, night, you know. It was a seasoned crew, and we're like, yeah, you know, if the star alarm goes off, you know, it'd be a miracle if it goes off tonight. Everybody's hunkered down. Well, these meth heads go out on a boat called the Midnight Sun, and they fall asleep and they run ashore on the backside of a fog deck island. And that was a 1,000-foot cliff. And there's this boat's on getting, it's backed into it and it's getting pummeled apart. And we didn't know this. We're leaving. Star alarm goes off, right? So I walk out of the barracks, and up in Kodiak, the barracks are like maybe like 100 yards, 20 yards in their hangar. So you walk out and like it's like just ripping the wind, and I see dumpsters, these aluminum dumpsters they had up in Kodiak, like where you put garbage, are rolling down, like, or they're rolling, they're crushing cars, like hitting cars, smashing cars, and going, like, I'm like, oh my god, this is crazy, you know. So we go to get the helicopter, and we're taxiing out. We hear these guys screaming, we're breaking apart, you got to get out here, you know. And we're throwing pumps out, we're ready to go to work, you know. So we get out there in something like, I want to say it was like 12 minutes. It was so fast going out there, right? Meantime, I'm eating a box lunch because I'm like, man, I'm hungry, you know, it's midnight, you know. So I'm stuffing my face, right? we get on scene and we got to start sending baskets down to get these guys off the boat. And just an absolute crazy experience to see these guys going, you know, getting in there, and you got a 1,000-foot cliff behind you, and it's just waves are washing over. It's a really unique thing to see, and how the team worked with pilots, Rush Schumer and co-pilot, everybody worked together, and just kind of made you realize that one slip of the, you know, one accident for these guys is going to make it so they're not going to go home to their loved ones, you know. So whatever that would be up there. But we get back, and then the next thing you know, it's like we had such a headwind. It took us like an hour and 20 minutes to get back. You're like, holy God, you know. It was just, the weather up there is so freaking unique. It's unreal, you know. But hope I explained that enough, you know.
Oh, man, kinda, I like it. And I'd be curious to know what, so, you know, you said that you're looking down, you're seeing all that, you know, just the violence of the ocean, you know, the wind speed, yeah. You know what's going on. Like, what's going through your head when you're about to make that kind of deployment?
So, I guess the best thing I could tell you is when we put me out, they're like, the flight mechanic called me back in, he's like, we can't do it. So we had to go to plan B and drop the basket, which is always tough, right? Especially when you want to go down. And the flight mechanic's saying, hey, you know, this isn't going to work out. You know, I guess what's going through your head at the time is, you know, my thing is, how do I get out of this? You know, what's your, so as a young swimmer, you're always like, I'm invincible, right? I don't have anything. I have 4 kids back home now, you know? So you start thinking, you know, I'm not saying put a romantic or anything else, but you're going to be a little more cautious as you get older, right? Cause you got more to lose, you know? And, you know, it kind of wound up, you know, when any deployment you take that's risky, you kind of focus on the mission. And, you know, I always say it's slow is, you know, smooth is slow, slow is fast. How do you say that?
Slow is smooth, smooth is fast.
Yeah. And that's what it comes down to. Everything slows down in my world. You know, when you're going to go out, leave the helicopter, whether you're 270 miles offshore or you're 10 yards offshore in a hell of a storm, you know, it's all the same. You just kind of just rely on your training. You've been trained, right? You calm down, and, you know, you just, what I've always done before I deployed in any kind of, you know, if you're offshore, way offshore, is I always take just a couple of moments, because you're always, you know how helicopters are, they're always doing checklists, right? So they'll do checklists for, you know, take them a half hour to do a checklist to get down out of the air, which is for a purpose. Anyways, I always just take a few moments, say a few prayers. You know, I always drink something, you know, and just kind of set the mood to go out and focus. That's the main thing. It's like if you're gonna do well, you always focus on something, right? So, but kind of got long-winded on that one.
No, very cool, man. That was, you know, it kind of took us into your thoughts there whenever it's happening.
You know, but you're trained, right? So a lot of times you don't have time to think. It's just more automatic. And a lot of times, if your training's good enough, it should be easier than training. Some of the SAR cases that went on that should have been the most hairy SAR cases, and, you know, like, we pulled, it just goes off without any, without a hitch, and things are perfect. Because you train so hard, right? And I flew a lot and trained hard. So I always felt like I had the edge up on it. You know, I saw some crews go out and they totally dick it up. And you're like, well, that guy got an air medal for really being incompetent, you know? And it's like, yeah, they landed at the wrong airport. They were completely incompetent, but they got an air medal. You're like, how is that possible? You know?
Yeah, we talk about that kind of stuff on the show all the time, just where you, you know, some of the things that you would almost think would be the hairiest are actually the easiest because it's something you train for. And then what'll get you is either complacency on the easy stuff or something that that you never even considered, never even trained for, never just came up.
You know, some of the hardest things I've seen in the Coast Guard was the crashes went through back in the, you know, late 2000s and early 2010, 2012, 13, all the way up through 2000 and what was it, 2012, right? So they were the hardest because I knew them guys. You know, a lot of we were stationed together, flight mechanics, rescue swimmers. We went to schools together. You know, they were the tough ones, and you could never put it together because it was always like, it wasn't a dark and stormy. You know, it wasn't a, you know, Admiral Ostebo at the time, he was an aviator. He got fried for that whole thing, but he said to me, you know, he said to me in the head, you know, we're talking, I'm like, how do we get here? Where do we go from here? He's like, look, all this happened on training flights, on ferry flights. He goes, what, you know, why are we so, we're so locked on in search and rescue at night, but we're not locked on every time we should be, you know? And we're like, he had a point there, you know, he kind of humbled me a little bit. I'm like, yep, he's right. You know, we got to get back to the basics and do it right, you know, and everything, whether you're going to drive your family across country on a trip or, you know, you're going to go out for a, you know, Sunday drive and get some ice cream, you know, you got to be locked on anymore, right? Because the world's a weird place. So, you know, and that sort of comes down to training. And Coast Guard will give it to you. You just got to apply it.
Did it make you think, man, when aircraft started falling out of the sky, did it make you reconsider the career choice at all?
No, I always knew that no aircraft was going to fall out of us. I mean, I've had my emergencies, you know, stuff that out of the norm that you know, like I had a ERD failure, about an ERD. It's emergency backup for the hoist that failed on me. Bad design flaw. Something we shouldn't have done, but you know, I just always knew I was going to go home because there was so much redundancy in the Coast Guard of what I did, you know. And no, I don't think I ever reconsidered it. Did I see some people that were shaken afterwards? Yeah, I mean, you know, definitely good friends that you know we really, on my crew. Every time I went out with my crew, we were locked on. We were always locked on. I never let up on the little things. And I think that I had an impact, you know, trained a lot of rescue swimmers doing it and try to instill them that it stay locked on the whole time. You'd be good to go. And, you know, to this day, I'm pretty proud of the people that I trained, you know.
So, very cool, man.
I keep saying so a lot, man. I'm sorry. My wife gets mad. She's like, saying this.
Well, we're not married, so we're all right with it.
Yeah. Bill's got the t-shirt, though.
That's old.
I'm sorry, man. Somebody had to say it.
Hey, it's sorry, man. Just like Key West, 20 bucks is 20 bucks.
20 bucks is 20 bucks.
Yeah.
We're a mess.
I actually, you know, getting back to the veteran thing, and I'm going to make this easy. Being a veteran now, it's so weird because people thank you. You're like, hey, thanks for your service. You're like, man, I had the best 20 years of my life. I did some of the coolest things in the world. I would say, thank you. It was my pleasure.
Yeah, know? Very cool. Yeah, good reply.
You do some of the dumb shit.
Before we end this, we want to give a plug for some people and organizations that we believe in.
The Coast Guard Foundation supports the brave men and women of the Coast Guard when they need it the most, providing everything from financial aid to families in crisis to scholarships and playground equipment. As a nonprofit 501c3 charity, they count on our donations to deliver this support. Visit CoastGuardFoundation.org. That's CoastGuardFoundation.org to read about their programs and donate what you can to support those who guard our nation's coast.
Thanks for taking the time to listen.
If you like what this podcast is about and what we delivered, look us up at theyhadtogooutcom or your favorite podcast platform and like, comment, subscribe, and share so we can keep the momentum up and do bigger things going forward.
Look for a new episode every Sunday. Until then, fair winds and following seas.